A logo appears in bold, slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now a logo appears in black and white film of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Titles appear. Groucho, Chico, and Harpo, the Marx Brothers in A Night at the Opera, with Kitty Carlisle and Alan Jones. Copyright 1935 by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Corporation. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH, Boston. Described by Kate Roosevelt. Read by Peter Haydu. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. More titles. Directed by Sam Wood. Screenplay by George S. Kaufman and Maury Riskin. From a story by James Kevin McGinnis. Musical score by Herbert Stothart. Recording director Douglas Shearer. Art director Cedric Gibbons. Cast. Groucho Marx as Otis B. Driftwood. Chico Marx as Fiorello. Harpo Marx as Tommaso. Kitty Carlisle as Rosa. Alan Jones as Ricardo. Walter King as Laspari. Siegfried Ruhmann as Gottlieb. Margaret Dumont as Mrs. Claypool. Edward Keen as the Captain. And Robert Emmett O'Connor as Henderson. Now a woman in a beaded black gown sits in an elegant restaurant.
Gentleman is not arrived yet.
No, he has not.
I'm afraid the dinner will be spoiled.
What difference does it make? It's too late to dine now. Oh, boy.
Yes, ma'am.
Will you page Mr. Otis B. Driftwood, please? Mr. Otis B. Driftwood.
The page circles the tables behind him. A man sitting with a pretty blonde turns. He wears wire glasses and has dark eyebrows and a thick mustache.
Mr. Driftwood!
Boy, will you do me a favor and stop yelling my name all over this restaurant? Do I go around yelling your name?
Mr. Driftwood!
Say, is your voice changing or is somebody else paging me around here?
Mr. Driftwood!
Why, Mrs. Claypool, hello!
Mr. Driftwood, you invited me to dine with you at 7 o'clock. It is now 8 o'clock and no dinner.
What do you mean, no dinner? I just had one of the biggest meals I've ever ate in my life. And no thanks to you, either.
I've been sitting right here since 7 o'clock.
Yes, with your back to me. When I invite a woman to dinner, I expect her to look at my face. That's the price she has to pay.
You check, sir.
$9.40? This is an outrage. If I were you, I wouldn't pay it.
He tosses it to the blonde.
Now then, Mrs. Claypool, what are we going to have for dinner?
You've had your dinner.
All right, we'll have breakfast. Waiter?
Yes, sir.
Have you got any milk-fat chicken?
Yes, sir.
Well, squeeze the milk out. I want to bring me a glass.
He puffs on a cigar.
Yes,
Mr. Driftwood, 3 months ago, you promised to put me into society. In all that time, you've done nothing but draw a very handsome salary.
You think that's nothing, huh? How many men do you suppose are drawing a handsome salary nowadays? Why, you can count them on the fingers of one hand, my good woman.
I'm not your good woman.
Don't say that, Mrs. Claypool. I don't care what your past has been. To me, you'll always be my good woman, because I love you. There. I didn't mean to tell you, but you dragged it out of me. I love you.
It's rather difficult to believe that when I find you dining with another woman.
That woman? Do you know why I sat with her? Because she reminded me of you.
Really?
Of course. That's why I'm sitting here with you. Because you remind me of you. Your eyes, your throat, your lips. Everything about you reminds me of you. Except you. How do you account for that? She figures that one out, she's good.
Mr. Driftwood, I think we'd better keep everything on a business basis.
How do you like that? Every time I get romantic with you, you want to talk business. I don't know, there's something about me that brings out the business in every woman.
His eyes roll.
All right, we'll talk business. You see that man over there eating spaghetti?
No.
Well, you see the spaghetti, don't you? Now, behind that spaghetti is none other than Hermann Gottlieb, director of the New York Opera Company. Do you follow me?
Yes.
Well, stop following me. I'll have you arrested. Now, I have arranged for you to invest $200,000 in the New York Opera Company.
I don't understand.
Don't you see? You'll be a patron of the opera. You'll get into society. Then you can marry me, and they'll kick you out of society. And all you've lost is $200,000.
Oh, Mr. Driftwood.
Ah, Gottlieb, allow me. Mrs. Claypool, Mr. Gottlieb.
Gottlieb bows to Mrs. Claypool. Driftwood bobs up and down to Gottlieb.
Mrs. Claypool. Mrs. Claypool, I could go on like this all night, but it's tough on my suspenders. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. Mrs. Claypool, Mr. Gottlieb, Mr. Gottlieb, Mrs. Claypool.
He does a quick jig.
Mr. Claypool. Now, if you four people want to play bridge, don't mind me. Go right ahead.
Mrs. Claypool, I am so happy.
He kisses her hand.
I just wanted to see if your rings were still there.
Mrs. Claypool, you're as charming as you are beautiful.
I'm afraid you've used that speech before, Mr. Gottlieb.
Now listen here, Gottlieb. Making love to Mrs. Claypool is my racket. What you're after is $200,000.
Gottlieb fidgets.
And you better make it sound plausible, because incredible as it may seem, Mrs. Claypool isn't as big a sap as she looks. How's that for lovemaking?
I think the Europeans do it better.
All right, Gottlieb, it's your turn. You take a whack at it. And keep it clean.
They glare at him.
Mrs. Claypool, it is most generous of you to help us. Now, you have, of course, heard of Rudolfo Laspari.
Oh, of course.
Oh, he's the greatest tenor since Caruso.
Yes.
Tonight, with the money you so generously provide, I sign Laspari for the opera company. He will be a sensation. All New York will be at your feet.
Well, there's plenty of room.
And now the opera awaits us. If you both will honor me by occupying my bags.
I should be charmed.
And you, Mr. Trichter?
Well, I'll join up with you later. And listen, Gottlieb, Nick's on the lovemaking because I saw Mrs. Claypool first. Of course, her mother really saw her first, but there's no point in bringing the Civil War into this.
Now in a dressing room at the opera, a man with blonde curls stands in front of a mirror. Wearing a ruffled Pierrot clown costume, he tries to sing. He shakes his head and sprays a mister into his throat. Hearing a noise, he busies himself as a man in a suit and fedora enters, a walking stick in hand.
Perador!
What are you doing in my costume? Take it off at once, do you hear? Immediately.
The blonde man removes the costume to reveal a sea captain's jacket.
Why, you... You...
He throws the impersonator against the wall.
Take that off.
The blonde man struggles out of the jacket and straightens the skirt of a peasant dress. He grins coyly.
Take off that dress, do you hear me? You dumb idiot, you do what I say or I'll break your neck.
He chases the blonde man around the small room, knocking over a chair and a pile of luggage.
You hear me? Take off that dress. If I get my hands on you...
Yanking a whip from the wall, he lunges forward.
You're no longer my dresser, you're fired. Get out! Get out! Get out, do you hear me? Out you go, and don't come back in here again.
In the hall, a pretty woman with dark hair and porcelain skin stands stunned for a moment, then rushes to the impersonator on the floor.
Don't you care? You're lucky to be rid of him.
Smiling, she pats his shoulder and helps him to his feet. The door opens.
Oh, good evening, Rosa.
Good evening, Signore.
Tommaso, why don't you come in? I've been waiting for you.
The actor leads Tommaso back inside. In Rosa's room.
Are they not beautiful, Signorina, from Signor Laspari?
I wouldn't wear them if they were the only flowers in the world. Come in.
Oh, no, not if you're going to use that tone. Now let's try the whole thing all over again, only this time try to be a little more cordial.
A clean-shaven young man.
Come in.
Oh, that's better. Now let's try it once more.
No, Ricky, you're such a fool.
And what was it you wanted to see me about?
Oh, I suppose I sent for you.
Well, you meant to. Didn't she, Marie?
Uh-huh.
Now, look, here is the last night of the season, and I'm more in love with you than ever. Now, what are you going to do about it?
Now, Ricardo, we have all summer to talk that over. Tonight, we have to sing an opera.
Have to sing an opera? You have to sing an opera. I'm nothing but a glorified chorus man.
Don't say that.
I've got to say it. I've got something else to say. What are you doing tonight unless that big ham Laspari's asked you first?
He has asked me first.
Just my luck.
But I'm having supper with you, Ricardo.
Hooray! We'll have champagne, music, flowers.
He sees the corsage.
Laspari. Oh, no. No flowers.
Now a dark, curly-haired man in the mailroom.
Well, Fiorello.
Tony.
Where have you been all this week?
Oh, here, there, different places. You got some mail for me?
Mail for you? You don't work here.
Right, where am I going to get my mail? I don't work any place.
The blonde-haired Tommaso appears.
Hey, Tommaso!
From a platform, Tommaso points in excitement, then holds a finger to his lips for quiet. He slides down a spiral staircase, then spins into Fiorello's arms.
Hey, that's so good. Don't be so glad. I brought you a present. You got something for me, too? What do you got?
They each pull out a long, thick sausage.
Where's Ricardo?
Tommaso points and holds a finger to his lips for quiet. Fiorello leaves. Tommaso turns, sees a fire axe, and chops the sausage. He glances around, shushing for silence, then leaves, munching sausage. On stage, Laspari wears the Pierrot costume and beats a drum. Rosa sits in front. In the wings, Fiorello watches for young Ricardo.
Fiorello!
Ricardo!
Say, what are you doing here? I thought you were out with the circus.
The circus? When was I with the circus? Oh, I nearly forgot. It was a long time ago, last week. Why, since then, I have lots of jobs.
Your piano and my voice. You know, all those years we studied at the conservatory, and what's come of it?
Oh, that's the matter with you. We're still young. We got our health.
He looks toward the stage where Laspare sings.
You hear that? Someday, Ricardo, you're going to be where Laspare is. Why, when you were a little boy, 6 years old, you'll sing better than Laspare.
Yeah, maybe I was better at six than I am now.
You're making me sick. You're crazy. Why, you sing better than Laspare ever could sing, and you know it.
All right, I know it and you know it, but the public doesn't know it.
All right, we tell the public. What you need is a manager. A wise guy, somebody who's a very smart. Hey, I know just the man for you.
You do? Who is it?
Me.
But you wouldn't make any money at it.
All right, I break even, just as long as I'm not losing nothing.
Outside, Driftwood arrives, sprawled in an open-air carriage.
Is the opera over yet?
Not yet, signore, in a few minutes.
Hey, you, I told you to slow that nag down. On account of you, I nearly heard the opera. Now then, once around the park and drive slowly. And none of your back talk.
They move off. On stage, in a village courtyard, Rosa sings alone. In the wings, Ricardo gazes at her.
You're still crazy about her. And she's crazy about you, too?
Even if she was, I couldn't ask her to marry me.
Hey, don't worry. The manager, he's a fix everything. Anyhow, we're together again. You and me, just like old times, eh?
Yeah, like old times.
Hey, you better my life.
Rosa steps forward, her arms opening. In a balcony, Gottlieb helps Mrs. Claypool into her wrap.
If you pardon my saying so, Mrs. Claypool, Mr. Driftwood seems to me hardly the person to handle your business affairs.
I'm beginning to think bravo, the same bravo, thing. Bravo,
Driftwood enters and
bravo,
sits.
Bravo, bravo! Well, I made it. How soon does the curtain go up?
The curtain, Mr. Driftwood, will go up again next season.
You've missed the entire opera.
Well, I only missed it by a few minutes.
He rises.
Then I can go then, eh?
Oh, Mrs. Fable, was I right? Isn't Laspare the greatest tenor that ever lived?
He's superb. But what would you have to pay him?
What's the difference? He must sail with us tomorrow, no matter how much we pay him. Why, he would be worth $1,000 a night.
How much?
$1,000 a night.
$1,000 a night? What does he do?
What does he do? He sings.
And you're willing to pay him $1,000 a night just for singing? Why, you can get a phonograph record of Minnie the Moocher for 75 cents. For a buck and a quarter, you can get Minnie.
If you'll excuse me, Mrs. Claypool, I think I had better arrange to see Laspare immediately. You are agreed, $1,000 a night.
Just as you think.
$1,000 a night? There must be some way I can get a piece of this. Wait a minute. Why don't I sign Laspare? I represent Mrs. Claypool.
But I represent the New York Opera Company. Now, boy, will you give my car to Signor Laspare, please?
Backstage, the cast mingles with tuxedoed men and elegant women. Tommaso enters, wearing a frayed top hat and carrying a covered silver tray. He tries to squeeze through to Laspare.
What is it? What do you want?
Tommaso holds out the tray and lifts the cover. Laspare frowns and grabs a card off the tray. Away from the crowd, he reads, "May I see you? Hermann Gottlieb." He smiles smugly, then walks over to Rosa and swings her away from a group.
Rosa.
Yes, signore?
My good friend Hermann Gottlieb is coming back to see me. How would you like to have supper with us?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Signor Laspare. I already have an engagement.
Oh, I see.
He looks at Ricardo.
Well, that's too bad, because I have an idea he's going to invite me to sing in New York. And he may permit me to select my leading lady. Are you sure you can't break your appointment?
I'm terribly sorry, signore.
She leaves on Ricardo's arm. Tight-lipped, Laspare strides behind the set where Tommaso bangs the tray lid and plays a tin whistle. Laspare grabs him.
What do you mean by humiliating me in front of all those people? You're fired, do you understand? You're fired.
Hey, you big bully, what's the idea of hitting that little bully?
Will you kindly let me handle my own affairs? Get out. Now, what have you got to say to me?
Just this. Can you sleep on your stomach with such big buttons on your pajamas?
He yanks a pom-pom.
Why, you...
Tommaso hammers him on the head with a mallet.
Nice work. I think you got him. Ah, smelling salts. That'll bring him to. You're sorry for what you did, eh?
That shows a nice spirit.
Laspari starts to rise.
Now he's coming along. Yeah, he'll be fine now.
Tommaso hits him again, then scurries off. Driftwood rests a foot on Laspari's stomach.
Get fresh with me, eh?
How do you do?
Hello.
Fiorello.
What's the matter, mister?
Oh, we had an argument and he pulled a knife on me, so I shot him.
Do you mind if I...
No, go right ahead. Plenty of room.
Fiorello puts his foot on Laspari.
2 beers, bartender.
I'll take 2 beers, too.
Well, things seem to be getting better around the country.
I don't know. I'm a stranger here myself.
Say, I just remembered. I came back here looking for somebody. You don't know who it is, do you?
It's a funny thing. It just slipped my mind.
Oh, I know. The greatest tenor in the world. That's what I'm after.
Why, I'm his manager.
Whose manager?
The greatest tenor in the world.
The fellow that sings at the opera here?
Sure.
Driftwood eyes him.
What's his name?
What do you care? So I can't pronounce it. What do you want with him?
Well, I want to sign him up for the New York Opera Company. You know that America is waiting to hear him sing?
Well, he can sing loud, but he can't sing that loud.
Well, I think I can get America to meet him halfway. Could he sail tomorrow?
You pay him enough money, he could sail yesterday. How much you pay him?
Well, I don't know. Let's see. $1,000 a night. I'm entitled to a small profit. How about $10 a night?
$10? I'll take it.
Driftwood puffs his cigar.
All right, but remember, I get 10% for negotiating the deal.
Yes, and I get 10% for being the manager. How much does that leave?
Well, that leaves him, $8.
$8, eh? Well, he sends $5 home to his mother.
Well, at least $3.
$3. Can he live in New York on $3?
Like a prince. Of course, he won't be able to eat, but he can live like a prince. However, out of that $3, you know, he'll have to pay an income tax.
Oh, his income tax.
Yes, you know, there's a federal tax and a state tax and a city tax and a street tax and a sewer tax.
How much does this come to?
Well, I figure if he doesn't sing too often, he can break even.
All right, we take it.
All right, fine. Now, here are the contracts. You just put his name at the top and you sign at the bottom. There's no need of you reading that because these are duplicates.
Yeah, it's a duplicate.
Smiling, each considers a long sheet of paper.
Duplicates,
eh? I say they're duplicates.
Oh, sure, it's a duplicate, sir.
Don't you know what duplicates are?
Sure, there's 5 kids up in Canada.
Driftwood glances sidelong at him.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. I haven't been in Canada in years. Well, go ahead and read it.
They look back at the papers.
What does it say?
Well, go on and read it.
All right, you read it.
All right, I'll read it to you.
Driftwood glances over.
Can you hear?
I haven't heard anything yet. Did you say anything?
Well, I haven't said anything worth hearing.
Well, that's why I didn't hear anything.
Well, that's why I didn't say anything.
He pulls the paper close to his nose and peers at it.
Can you read?
I can read, but I can't see it.
He holds the paper at arm's length.
Don't seem to have it in focus here.
Both stretch out their arms.
My arms were a little longer, I could read it. You haven't got a baboon in your pocket, have you? Here we are. Now I've got it. Now pay particular attention to this first clause because it's most important. It says the party of the first part should be known in this contract as the party of the first part. How do you like that? That's pretty neat, eh?
No, it's no good.
What's the matter with it?
I don't know. Let's hear it again.
It says the party of the first part should be known in this contract as the party of the first part.
Yeah, sounds a little better this time.
Well, it grows on you. Would you like to hear it once more?
Just the first part.
What do you mean, the party of the first part?
No, the first part of the party or the first part.
Driftwood shoots him a sidelong glance.
All right, it says the first part of the party of the first part should be known in this contract as the first part of the party of the first part should be known in this contract. Look, why should we quarrel about a thing like this? We'll take it right out, eh?
Yeah, it's too long anyhow.
They rip off the tops.
Now what do we got left?
Well, I got about 1.5 feet.
He lifts up his long page again.
Now it says the party of the second part should be known in this contract as the party of the second part.
Well, I don't know about that.
Now what's the matter?
I don't like it the second party either.
Well, you should have come to the first party. We didn't get home till around 4 in the morning. I was blind for 3 days.
Hey, look. Why can't the first part of the second party be the second part of the first party? Then you got something.
Well, look, rather than go through all that again, what do you say?
Fine.
Now I've got something here you're bound to like. You'd be crazy about it.
No, I don't like it.
You don't like what?
Whatever it is, I don't like it.
Well, don't let's break up an old friendship over a thing like that. Ready?
Okay. Now, the next part I don't think you're going to like.
Well, your word's good enough for me. Now then, is my word good enough for you?
I should say not.
Well, that takes out two more clauses. Now, the party of the eighth part...
No, that's no good, no.
The party of the ninth...
No, that's no good, too.
He looks at his slip of paper.
Hey, how is it my contract is skinnier than yours?
Well, I don't know. You must have been out on the tail last night. But anyhow, we're all set now, aren't we?
Sure.
Now, just you put your name right down there, and then the deal is legal.
I forgot to tell you, I can't write.
Well, that's all right. There's no ink in the pen anyhow. But listen, it's a contract, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
We've got a contract, no matter how small it is.
Hey, wait. What does this say here, this thing here?
Oh, that's the usual clause. That's in every contract. That just says, if any of the parties participating in this contract are shown not to be in their right mind, the entire agreement is automatically nullified.
Well, I don't know.
It's all right. That's in every contract. That's what they call a sanity clause.
You can't fool me. There ain't no sanity clause.
Well, you win the white carnation.
I give this to Ricardo.
Gottlieb.
Sensation in New York. Pardon me, could you tell me where Signor Laspari is?
Sure, there's the Laspari.
Laspari?
Laspari? And whom did I sign?
You signed Ricardo Baroni. That's my man.
Signor Laspari, what happened? Speak to me. It's me. It's Gottlieb.
Tommaso loosens a sandbag hanging above him.
Gottlieb. What is this now?
Laspari drops back.
How highly the fruit is falling this season.
Now, porters carry luggage past a sign, sailing today, SS Americus. People move quickly along the wharf. On the gangplank, Driftwood follows Mrs. Claypool.
Are you sure you have everything okay?
I've never had any complaints yet.
Below, Rosa gazes at Ricardo.
Well, here you are. On your way to America and Bing.
Oh, Ricardo, I'm going to miss you.
How do you think I feel about it?
Ah, Miss Castaldi, all ready for the big trip?
Oh, Mr. Gottlieb, this is Ricardo Baroni of the opera company.
How do you do?
Baroni? Did you say Baroni?
Is it as funny as all that?
Oh, Mr. Otis B. Driftwood seemed to think that you had quite a voice.
Oh, he has, Mr. Gottlieb. Really, he has. A wonderful voice.
Yes, really, I have.
Well, that's interesting. Oh,
Gottlieb turns away.
Rosa!
Laspari takes Rosa and a throng sweeps her away.
Come on, Ricardo, come on.
Oh, thanks.
Rosa struggles.
Come on, Ricky!
While Laspari smirks, the crowd rushes Rosa up the gangplank. On board, holding an armload of flowers, she leans on a railing looking for Ricardo. Laspari waves his hat at the crowd below.
Yeah?
Will you give us a farewell song?
Oh, please, give me!
My dear friends, I am so sorry I must be excused, but I have a slight touch of laryngitis.
Oh,
where's Rosa?
Yes, Rosa!
His fans gone, he turns to Gottlieb.
Why should I sing for them when I'm not being paid for it?
The fans crowd Rosa, who shakes her head gently until she spots Ricardo down on the dock.
Yes, of course I'll sing.
She gazes at Ricardo.
Well, I know it is dream I dream with every longing sigh. I'll count the hours when we'll
smiles.
Alone, alone with a sky of romance above. Alone, alone when you whisper goodbye, my love. But I will still remember the happiness we've known. And though I may be
Ricardo climbs onto a trunk.
As long as I find you in every dream, I know I'll see you each night in the starlight gleam. And in those magic moments, I'll have
stands and smiles.
Along with a sky of romance above. Alone, alone when you whisper goodbye, my love. But I will still remember the happiness we've known.
Rosa gazes intently.
And though I may be alone, I'm not alone. As long as I find you in every dream.
Rosa glances around, then steps over to Gottlieb, who stands listening and stroking his beard.
In the star.
Oh, Mr. Gottlieb, hasn't he a wonderful voice? There must be a place for him in New York.
Not a bad voice. Someday, perhaps, when he has made a reputation.
On the dock, people watch Ricardo, who gazes solely at Rosa.
Till we are together, we two.
On the ship, Fiorello and Tommaso scramble down an open staircase.
Rosa!
Fiorello hugs Rosa. Tommaso, carrying a bullhorn, jumps on them both, kisses two staring women, then kisses a man on the lips, and embraces a ship officer.
Hey, come.
Below, Ricardo sings on.
I will still remember the happiness we know.
Rosa runs to the rail. A troop of singing well-wishers with a violin and a guitar is ushered off the ship. A breeze ruffles Rosa's fur stole.
All right, take it away.
Yes, sir.
Sailors hoist the gangplank. Behind them, driftwood pushes through the crowd.
Hey, have I got time to go back and pay my hotel bill?
Sorry, too late.
That suits me fine.
He pockets the bill, then strides, crouched, back into the crowd. The lovers gaze longingly at each other. Now, below deck, driftwood saunters.
Hey! Hey, that's mine. A trunk thief, eh? Where are you going with that?
Suite number 58, sir.
58? That's me. Let's go.
He climbs on top. They collide with another porter.
Hey, what's your idea? What's your idea? Hit and run driver, huh?
I'm sorry, sir.
Sorry, my eye. Look at that fender. It's all bumped out of shape. You'll pay for this, my good man. Let me see your number. 32, eh? You got any insurance?
What?
Are you insured?
No, sir.
Well, you're just the fellow I want to see. I have here an accident policy that will absolutely protect you no matter what happens. If you lose a leg, we help you look for it. And all this will cost you is, what have you got there? A dollar? $1. Here you are.
He sticks his hotel bill in the porter's pocket.
Let's go. Suite 58 and don't go over 20 miles an hour.
He stretches out on the trunk. At a cabin door, a steward bows to three identical men wearing uniforms and long beards.
Say, was that three fellas or one fellow with three beards?
He passes Gottlieb preening his beard at a mirror.
Hi, Gottlieb. Always beating around the bush.
Gottlieb scowls. At another door, they pause.
Wait a minute.
He steps inside. Rosa sobs on her bed.
Anything I can do?
She sits up, dabbing her eyes.
Oh, just a little homesick.
That's funny. I happen to have with me the greatest prescription for homesickness you ever saw. A fella gave it to me just before the boat sailed. Here's the prescription, and take it every 2 hours.
He hands her a letter. Dearest, I love you, Ricardo.
Oh.
She hugs him gratefully.
Oh. I'm going out and get another prescription.
He leaves Rosa to reread the letter. In another cabin, Mrs. Claypool turns from unpacking.
Ah, hello, Tex.
Hello.
Say, Pretty classy layout you got here.
Do you like it?
Ah, twin beds. You little rascal, you.
One of those is a day bed.
A likely story. Have you read any good books lately?
Mr. Driftwood, will you please get off the bed? What would people say?
They'd probably say you're a very lucky woman. Now, will you please shut up so I can continue my reading?
No, I will not shut up. And will you kindly get up at once?
All right, I'll go. I'll make you another proposition. Let's go in my room and talk the situation over.
What situation?
Well, what situations have you got?
I most certainly will not go to your room.
Okay, then I'll stay here.
She covers her ears.
All right. I'll come, but get out.
Shall we say, 10 minutes?
Yes, 10 minutes. Anything but go.
Because if you're not there in 10 minutes, I'll be back here in 11. With squeaky shoes on.
He motions to the porter. In the hallway, passengers stare as he dances by, tipping his fedora on his head. Grinning, he enters a cabin just big enough for a single bed, a sink, and a porthole.
Hey, wait a minute. This can't be my room.
Yes, sir. Suite number 58, sir.
58? That's an awful big number for a birdcage this size.
The trunk fills the door.
Wouldn't it be simpler if you just put the stateroom in the trunk? Say, who is responsible for installing me in this telephone booth?
Mr. Gottlieb picked it up for you, sir.
Gottlieb, eh? Well, that's awfully decent of him. Awfully decent. Did he pick out the whole room or just the porthole?
I'm sure you'll find it very cozy, sir.
Cozy? Cozy is hardly the word for it.
Anything else, sir?
Yes, tomorrow you can take the trunk out and I'll go in.
He turns and steps in backwards, pulling the door shut and rear-ending the trunk. Inside, he squeezes around the trunk and climbs up on the bed to unpack.
Sing ho for the open road.
He opens the huge trunk. Ricardo and Fiorello crouch inside.
Hello, boss. What are you doing here?
Hello. Well, this makes it a perfect voyage. I'm terribly sorry, but I thought this was my trunk.
It is your trunk.
I don't remember packing you, boys.
You remember Ricardo Baroni, the greatest tenor in the world. You nearly signed him up once, you know.
Oh, sure. I just delivered a letter for you. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Just a little cramped.
Well, we're still in the harbor. As soon as we get out in the open ocean, there'll be plenty of room. Say, isn't that my shirt you've got on?
Hey, look, I don't know. I found it in the trunk.
Well, then it couldn't be mine. Well, it's nice seeing you boys again, but I was expecting my other suit. You didn't happen to see it, did you?
Yeah, it took up too much room, so we sold it.
Did you get anything for it?
$1.40.
That's my suit, all right. Say, it's lucky I left another shirt in this drawer.
He opens it. Tommaso sleeps inside. Driftwood straightens.
That can't be my shirt. My shirt doesn't snore.
Shh. Don't wake him up. He's got insomnia. He's trying to sleep it off.
That's as grisly a looking object as I've ever seen. Well, get him up out of there.
He sits on the bed and watches the other two struggle to lift out Tommaso.
Say he's sleeping.
They prop the sleeping Tommaso between them.
Well, I wish you fellas had explained this thing to me.
Well, it's a very simple. You see, Ricardo's a love of Rosa. Rosa, she go to New York. We want to go to New York, too, but we got no money, so we hide in the trunk.
Well, if you've got no money, what are you going to do in New York?
Well, I can sing. There must be some place for me to work. Besides, I can be near Rosa. That's the main thing. Oh, you won't give us away, will you, Mr. Driftwood?
No, but you fellas have got to get out of here. I've got a date with a lady in a few minutes, and, you know the old saying, two's company and five's a crowd.
We go, but first we wanted something to eat. We don't eat all day. We're hungry.
Well, we'll discuss the food situation later.
We get a food or we don't go.
I know I never should have met you fellas. All right, but you've got to promise this grandma right after you've eaten.
All right.
Now I'll go and get the steward. And you fellas be quiet. Remember, you're stowaways.
All right. We not say nothing.
All right. Now just put that bag of Jell-O over here, eh?
They lay Tommaso and his bulbhorn on the bed.
Wouldn't it be simpler if you just had him stuffed?
He's no olive.
I'll go and get the steward and... Say, is this the door of the room or am I in the trunk?
Oh, over here.
Oh, be quiet now. Don't make any noise.
We no say nothing.
I'll get the steward.
Driftwood strides into the hall.
Stu!
Yes, sir.
I say, Stu.
Yes, sir.
What do we got for dinner?
Anything you like, sir. You might have some tomato juice, orange juice, grape juice, pineapple juice.
Hey, turn off the juice before I get electrocuted. All right, let me have one of each.
Fiorello listens inside.
And, two fried eggs, two poached eggs, two scrambled eggs, and two medium-boiled eggs.
And two hard-boiled eggs.
And two hard-boiled eggs. Make that three hard-boiled eggs.
The steward writes quickly.
And some roast beef, rare, medium, well done, and overdone.
And two hard-boiled eggs.
And two hard-boiled eggs. Make that three hard-boiled eggs. And 8 pieces of French pastry.
This two hard-boiled eggs.
And two hard-boiled eggs. Make that three hard-boiled eggs. And one duck egg. Have you got any stewed prunes?
Yes, sir.
Well, give them some black coffee. That'll sober them up.
And two hard-boiled eggs.
And two hard-boiled eggs. It's either foggy out or make that 12 more hard-boiled eggs. And, Stuart, rush that along, because the faster it comes, the faster this convention will be over.
Yes, sir.
Do they allow tipping on the boat?
Oh, yes, sir.
Have you got 2 fives?
Yes, sir.
Well, then you won't need the 10 cents I was going to give you.
He heads back inside.
Well, that's fine. If that steward is deaf and dumb, he'll never know you're in here.
Oh, sure, that's all right.
Yes?
We've come to make up your room.
Are those my hard-boiled eggs?
I can't tell until they get in the room. Come on in, girls, and leave all hope behind.
They enter primly.
But you've got to work fast, because you've got to get out in 10 minutes.
Hey, Tomato, wake up, or they're going to fix the bed.
Say, I'd like 2 pillows on that bed there, huh?
Tommaso wilts over a maid.
Hey, there's a slight misunderstanding here. I said the girls had to work fast, not your friend.
He's still asleep.
You know, he does better asleep than I do awake.
Yeah, he always sleeps that way. Now he's half asleep.
Yes, he's half asleep and half Nelson.
All right, come on.
Yes?
Come on.
I'm the engineer.
Come on.
Came to turn off the heat. Well, you can start right in on him.
A burly man squeezes toward the back with one maid.
Tommaso, we're going to eat soon.
You know, if it wasn't for Gottlieb, I wouldn't have got this room. Just hold him there a second. Yes?
Did you want a manicure?
No, come on in. I hadn't planned on a manicure, but I think on a journey like this, you ought to have every convenience you can get.
She sits, and Tommaso puts his foot on her lap.
Hey, listen, I'm getting the manicure. Get out of here, will you?
She takes Driftwood's hand.
Did you want your nails long or short?
You better make them short. It's getting kind of crowded in here.
He presses back against the door.
I don't know. This isn't the way I pictured an ocean voyage. I always visualized myself sitting in a steamer chair with a steward bringing me bouillon.
Come on, Ricardo.
You couldn't get any bouillon in here unless they brought it in through a keyhole.
A huge man with a giant wrench.
I'm the engineer's assistant.
You know, I had a premonition you were going to show up. The engineer's right over there in the corner. You can chop your way right through.
He squeezes inside.
Say, is it my imagination or is it getting crowded here?
Well, I got plenty of room.
Driftwood cigar hovers over the manicurist.
Yes?
Is my Aunt Minnie in here?
Well, you can come in and prowl around if you want to. If she isn't in here, you can probably find somebody just as good.
Well, could I use your phone?
Use the phone? I'll lay even money. You can't get in the room.
How do you do?
This boat will be in New York before you can get to that phone.
I came to mop up.
Just the woman I'm looking for. Come right ahead.
She lifts a bucket.
You like a start on the ceiling. It's the only place that isn't being occupied.
She pushes in with a long mop.
Tell Aunt Minnie to send up a bigger room, too, will you?
Stuart?
Come right ahead.
Hey, Tommaso, the food!
Been waiting all
food.
Afternoon.
In the crush, sleeping Tommaso gets lifted up onto the food trays. Outside, Mrs. Claypool gingerly opens the door. Everyone tumbles out. Later, the ship sails beneath a full moon. In the dining room, elegant revelers wear party hats, throw confetti, and dance. Mrs. Claypool, Gottlieb, Driftwood, and Rosa sit at the captain's table with others.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that I welcome you all on this, the final night of the voyage. I cannot let the evening pass without paying a little tribute to our distinguished guests of honor, the three greatest aviators in the world.
The three long-bearded men rise in unison.
Three greatest aviators, but you notice they're traveling by boat.
We are honored by your presence, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wearing a cap with a bouncing crepe feather, Driftwood rises and nods to a stranger.
Do you rumba?
Why, yes, of course I do.
Well, take a rumba from 1 to 10.
Gottlieb leans toward Mrs. Claypool.
Mr. Claypool went to his reward 3 years ago.
And left you all alone.
All alone.
With $8 million.
$8 million.
Listen, Gottlieb, you're just wasting your time. If Mrs. Claypool wants to marry a fortune hunter, she's always got me.
Fortune hunter?
As a matter of fact, you can hardly call me a fortune hunter. Because when I first proposed to Mrs. Claypool, I thought she only had $7 million. But the extra million has never interfered with my feelings for her.
If you had any real feeling for me, you'd stop associating with the kind of riffraff I've seen you going around with.
You mean Gottlieb?
I mean those two uncouth men I saw you around the opera house with. I'm very grateful they're not on board the boat.
Why, have they slipped off?
Sit down.
Driftwood sits. Back in his cabin, Tommaso, Fiorello, and Ricardo emerge cautiously from the trunk.
Hey, come on, we find something to eat.
You think it's safe? You know, if they catch us, they'll deport us.
What do we gotta lose? If they deport us, they gotta feed us. Come on, we take a chance.
At the captain's table.
Does it mean nothing to you that I'm the greatest singer in the world?
But I love to hear you sing, Rodolfo.
Oh, no, no, no. Let me put it this way. I love you. I adore you. I would die for you. Now do you understand?
I'm afraid I don't.
The whole thing is very simple. When he says he's the greatest singer in the world, that means he loves you. Personally, I don't believe either statement.
There may be something in what you say.
I'll tell you something confidentially. The only tenor I could ever stand was a fellow by the name of Riccardo Baroni. Ever hear of him?
Riccardo. I wonder where he is right now. Probably roaming over the countryside someplace. Riccardo always loved the open. He never could stand being cooped up.
He still doesn't like it.
On the open-air deck, the three stowaways discover another party. Men in vests and loose shirts and women in headscarves and shawls eat, drink, and dance. A ship's officer passes the stowaways and smiles broadly. Tommaso spies a buffet table, and the three hover by it and gaze longingly at the food. A white-jacketed cook hands Tommaso a plate. Tommaso's eyes widen. His mouth gapes. The cook heaps spaghetti onto the plate. Tommaso stares. The three move eagerly along the table, grinning as servers heap pasta, fruit, sausage, cheese, and bread onto their plates and into their arms. Behind them, couples and children in folk costumes clasp hands and dance. Later, the three sit with empty plates.
Well, Tommaso, you feel better now, eh? And you, Ricardo, how do you feel?
After a meal like that? Great. Why, I could sing my head off.
My head to sing.
Oh, si, cosa, it's a wonderful
He rises, and Tommaso and Fiorello follow. Tommaso sits at a harp, Fiorello at a piano.
Hey, stop that. Get away from those instruments. What are you doing here?
Please let him play.
The man steps good-naturedly aside. Men in breeches and women in embroidered bodices and full skirts gather around Ricardo.
There's an old Italian phrase. It's an old Italian craze.
He swings a little girl.
Every little bambina says it the very first day. Every sweet signorina says it the very same way. It's funny little words don't really mean a thing. It's just a phrase that nowadays Italians love to sing. Così, cosa. It's a wonderful word, la 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 la. If anyone asks you how you are, it's proper to say così, cosa. Così, cosa. If a lady should ask you if you care, you don't have to start a love affair. Say così, cosa.
Men nod.
Does it mean yes? No. Does it mean no? Well, yes and no.
He puts his arms around two little girls.
Cosa. Get together and sing, la 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 la. It's easy this way to start the day and last the same. Così, cosa. Così.
He opens his arms. People laugh, lift their hands, and begin to skip and dance. Men in fedoras clap their hands to the beat. Couples face each other, link arms, and swing around. Women twirl, wearing skirts with brightly patterned aprons and hems. A laughing man spins a bright-eyed young woman into the center of the deck. They knock shoulders. He crooks one arm above his head, and she hikes her skirt coquettishly. They circle each other, hitch-kicking in rhythm. Women form a circle around the center and swish their white petticoats from side to side. Couples link at the waist, raising their free arms in the air as they turn. To the side, a young man and woman argue flirtatiously. She grins, and he kisses her cheek. Amid the spinning dancers, a woman's skirt swirls up around her bare legs. One after another, men leap between pairs of women. They lace arms and dance off. Joining in a circle, the women take a light step and twist off the stage. Four men leap into a huddle, then all link hands and form three concentric spinning circles. Ricardo stands at the center. Fiorello sits at the piano. He pokes a child's tummy. She giggles. The children cluster around the piano. Fiorello's fingers tease the keys. He skips one finger over the keys. He lets his hands move effortlessly as he looks up at the children. They watch, mesmerized. His index finger skates up the keys. Stands laughing. Tommaso shuffles up in his top hat. He pouts, then motions at them to wait. Looking around indignantly, he takes off his coat. He spins the piano stool up, squats over it, and it spins up under his seat. He pounds the keyboard furiously. He spits into his hands and rubs them. Getting up, he spins the stool down, squats, then tries to sit on the spinning seat. He jumps. Feigning anger, he rolls up his sleeves and sits down on the now still stool. The keyboard lid slams on his right hand. He lifts the lid and droops his floppy fingers onto the keys. Grinning, he pretends to scoop up his hand and balance it on his wrist. Then the lid slams on his other hand. Balancing his right hand, he lets the left dangle. He swings that arm up, but the other falls. His limp right hand mushes over the closed lid, up the music rest, then tickles the children's faces. Tommaso steps over behind the harp, gazing up at the heavens and smiling angelically. Quickly, he kisses each of his hands and sits down to play. His thumbs and pinkies extended, he plucks the row of taut strings. Thank you. Sitting on the stairs behind him, a young woman rests her head on the rail. A gray-haired woman nods as he plucks. With bug-wide eyes, he jiggles his head in time. He whistles and raises his eyebrows at the old woman. While plucking with his right hand, he cups his left to tamp the string. Two little girls watch and rapt. Deck above, the captain and Laspari listen. Tommaso looks up and catches Laspari's eye.
Those men, they can't be passengers on this boat. They must be stowaways.
Stowaways? Well, we'll soon find out.
He descends the stairs. Tommaso points wildly, alerting Riccardo and Fiorello. Quickly, they clamber up a rail behind them. Two uniformed ship officers try to push through the crowd. The stowaways disappear among the festive throng. Later, a guard stands outside a detention cabin. Inside, Fiorello paces. Tommaso sits beneath the porthole playing a kazoo. Fiorello's step quickens. Fiorello yanks away the kazoo, unlatches the porthole, and hurls it out. Tommaso flinches, then sulks. He swings open the porthole, peers briefly out, then stumbles out of the way just as a huge spray of water shoots in on Fiorello. Tommaso dives for the porthole. Outside, his head and shoulders flail as Fiorello tries to haul him back in. Driftwood waves hello from a higher porthole. Tommaso signals for a rope. Catching the end, he gestures to Riccardo and Fiorello to pull him in.
Now you go first and see if it's safe. Come on. Come on, off you go.
Tommaso struggles, shaking his head no, but they push him out. Holding the rope, he plummets into the ocean, then surfaces, spouting water like a whale. Above, driftwood motions, and Tommaso climbs hand over hand up the rope. Driftwood leans out and grabs for him.
But the boat's too far away.
On deck, at a winch, an engineer oils the wheel, lets out the rope, and Tommaso plummets back into the ocean. His friends peer from above. The engineer frowns, then oils the wheel again. Tommaso rockets upward past driftwood and dangles high above the deck.
What's he doing now?
I think he's hanging himself.
Tommaso glances around nervously, then shimmies down the rope. He swings past three square windows, catches the sill of one with his toe, and wriggles through. Inside, the three identical aviators sleep in a row in one bed, the covers tucked neatly under their beards. Tommaso gapes at them, then raises his eyebrows and grins. He tiptoes over, a pair of scissors snipping in his hand. Gingerly, he lifts one beard between two fingers. A moth flies out. He chases it with the scissors. It flies away, and he lifts the beard again. Now confetti streams past a banner. Welcome, heroes of the air. A crowd surrounds the docked ship. On board, the captain greets dignitaries in shiny top hats.
Gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to...
Quiet. Gentlemen, our distinguished guests have asked me to represent them and to act as their interpreter. Now, if you'll all follow me, I'll take you to their cabin. And if they're still in it, very few of us will come out alive.
The men glance at each other, then follow him to a cabin. Driftwood peers inside. The three shaved aviators lie in the bed, gagged.
Pardon me, our distinguished guests are having their shredded wheat. They'll be right out.
Fiorello, Ricardo, and Tommaso emerge, wearing uniforms and long beards.
Gentlemen.
Tommaso's salute pulls away a wisp of his beard.
Kind friends.
Here, give me that. Let's cut this short. The whole thing is very simple. They want you to go to the City Hall, and the mayor is going to make another speech. We can tear up the mayor's speech when we get there.
At City Hall, they stand on a crowded platform.
And so, my friends, as mayor of this great city, I take pleasure in inviting our distinguished visitors to tell us something about their achievement.
Fiorello steps nervously to the microphone. Then he leans toward Driftwood.
What'll I say?
Tell them you're not here.
Suppose they don't believe me.
They'll believe you when you start talking.
Fiorello gulps some water, then dabs his lips with his beard.
Friends!
Talk fast. I see a man in the crowd with a rope.
How we happened to come to America is a great story, but I don't tell that. When we first started out, we got no idea you give us this grand reception. We don't deserve it. And when I say we don't deserve it, believe me, I know what I'm talking about. Eh?
That's a novelty.
So now I tell you how we fly to America. The first time we started, we get a halfway across when we run out of gasoline, and we got to go back. Then I take twice as much gasoline. This time we were just about to land, maybe 3 feet. Well, what do you think? We run out of gasoline again. And the back we go again and get the more gas. This time I take a plenty gas. Well, we get a halfway over. When what do you think happened? We forgot the airplane. So we got to sit down and we talk it over. Then I get it a great idea. We not take a gasoline. We not take the airplane. We take a steamship. And that, friends, is how we fly across the ocean.
Driftwood shakes his hand.
I'm going out and arrange your bail.
This is the mayor again. And now I take great pleasure in introducing another of our heroes, who will tell you something of his exploits.
He turns to Tommaso, who shakes his head hastily.
From now on, it's every man for himself.
I would suggest you make your speech a little more direct than your brother's.
A dazed Tommaso nods. He looks helplessly at Driftwood.
What'll you give me to set fire to your beard?
Tommaso's eyes dart. Everyone waits, watching. He sees a pitcher of water and fills a glass. He offers the mayor some water, then drinks, tilting his head back. The mayor motions impatiently to the microphone. Tommaso nods happily and pours some more water. The mayor shifts anxiously. Tommaso lifts the glass, catches up his beard, and drinks right through it. He smooths down the beard as he reaches for more water.
Well, we're all right as long as the water supply holds up.
Tommaso drinks again. The mayor taps him frantically.
Please, the radio, your speech.
Tommaso looks around, then pours another glass. Water dribbles on his beard.
You know they may have to build a dam in back of him?
Tommaso's beard loosens below his wet lip. A broad, round-faced man in a tall derby narrows his eyes and steps forward. Tommaso quickly repastes the whiskers, but the dribbling water washes his chin clean. The round-faced man steps forward.
Hey, I think these fellas are phonies.
What's that you say?
You heard me.
Oh, they're being all about in the station. The Southman is over. You see this?
You know me, who's you? You hear what they say? They say they've never been so insulted in their life, and they absolutely refuse to stay here.
No, no, please. He didn't mean it. Tell them he didn't mean it.
No, he had three phonies. Now, we didn't even do this.
That's it.
Ricardo and Fiorello storm off.
Of course, you know this means war.
Driftwood storms off.
I'll see what you've done.
I'm sorry. I'm awful sorry.
He steps over to Tommaso.
I apologize, and I hope you're not offended.
Tommaso embraces him, and his whiskers stick to the other man's cheek. Chaos ensues. Tommaso flees. Later, a newspaper reports three stowaways who fooled City Hall. In an apartment salon, Driftwood sits at a breakfast table. Ricardo enters.
What are you singing about? Read this.
He tosses the newspaper to Ricardo.
What are you going to do?
Do? The first thing I'm going to do is throw those two gorillas out of here, and that goes for you, too. I thought I'd get rid of those mugs when I sold my trunk.
In the bedroom, Tommaso and Fiorello sleep on a cot.
Kitties! Come on, everything is piping hot.
Breakfast. Breakfast. Good morning. Oh, boy, I'm hungry. Oh.
Read that. That'll take away your appetite.
No, that only makes me hungrier.
Come on, you're going to be late for jail.
Tommaso claps his hands, then gathers all the pancakes.
Well, those certainly went like hotcakes.
Tommaso pours syrup.
You know, this isn't the way I anticipated my breakfast.
Tommaso adds ketchup, then a teacup.
You,
he offers it to Fiorello.
I don't like a cupcakes.
No.
Tommaso grabs Driftwood's cigar.
I know when I've had enough. Say, wait a minute.
He rolls it in a pancake.
A cigar, I just... Oh, bad enough I have to smoke those things without eating them.
Tommaso chews happily. Now he cuts the end of Fiorello's tie and makes a sandwich.
Glad I didn't bring my vest.
I forgot to tell you, he ate your vest last night for dessert.
He's half goat.
Yes, and that's giving him all the best of it.
Tommaso rubs his tummy. He lifts the sugar lid. Holding it up like a mirror, he dabs a pancake in sugar and powders his face.
A cigar on me.
With his pinky, he paints a ketchup mustache above his lip.
He's going to smell like a vegetable salad when he gets through with that. You know, I've been looking forward to this breakfast. I've been waiting all morning. This is how it wound up.
Tommaso dots vinegar behind his ears, then on his chest. He flinches. He pulls out a rubber glove, inflates it, then squeezes its fingers for milk.
Well,
I'll take a quart and a pint.
A little of that anyway.
The others hold up their cups.
Why don't you fellas be nice? Get out of here before I get arrested.
No, I'd like to stay and see that. What's that? If it's a policeman, knock once more. That's good enough for me.
The three outlaws scram out the fire escape. Driftwood pretends to eat.
Come in.
The door behind him opens, and the round-faced man enters. Driftwood eats busily. The man circles the table, surveying the room, then stops and eyes Driftwood suspiciously.
Yes?
You remember me. I'm Henderson, plain clothes man.
You look more like an old clothes man to me.
Henderson glances around.
Nice place.
Well, it's comfortable.
You live here all alone?
Yes, just me and my memories. I'm practically a hermit.
Oh, a hermit. I noticed the table's set for four.
That's nothing. My alarm clock is set for eight. That doesn't prove a thing.
A wise guy. Well, I'll take a little look around.
As he enters the bedroom, Tommaso creeps back inside the salon.
Hey, you!
Coming!
Driftwood scurries to him.
What's a hermit doing with four beds?
You see those first three beds?
Yes.
Last night I counted 5,000 sheep in those three beds, so I had to have another bed to sleep in. You wouldn't want me to sleep with the sheep, would you?
Henderson checks the bath, then peers under a cot. Driftwood dashes into the salon and shoos the others back outside.
Henderson, man, got someone who's not.
Hey, you! Who are you talking to?
I was talking to myself, and there's nothing you can do about it. I've had three of the best doctors in the East.
Well, I certainly heard somebody say something.
Oh, it's sheer folly on your part.
What's this?
Why, that's a fire escape. And that's a table, and this is a room. And there's the door leading out, and I wish you'd use it.
I want to be alone. You'll be alone when I throw you in jail.
He steps outside. In the bedroom, Tommaso and Fiorello carry a cot.
Look out! He's coming around the other way. Get inside, quick.
They just make it into the salon as Henderson circles into the bedroom.
If he catches you in here, don't let him catch you in here.
Hey, you!
Coming!
He hurries to the bedroom.
What became of that fourth bed?
What are you referring to, Colonel?
The last time I was in this room, there were four beds here.
Please, I'm not interested in your private life, Henderson.
Oh.
The cop steps into the salon.
Say!
He points.
What's that bed doing here?
I don't see it doing anything.
There's something funny going on around here.
Not around
here. But I'll get to the bottom of it.
He goes outside. Inside, they move another cot into the salon. Henderson circles into the bedroom.
I'll be on your guard, whatever you...
Hey, you!
Coming.
Am I crazy, or are there only two beds here?
Now, which question do you want me to answer first, Henderson?
Henderson stumbles into the salon.
Say! How did those two beds get together?
Well, you know how those things are. They breed like rabbits.
Let me tell you something. I'll sell this if I have to stay here all night.
Let me tell you something. If you're going to stay here all night, you'll have to ring
one
bed.
One bed?
One bed? What are you talking about?
In the salon, Henderson crashes into an upright cot. In the bedroom, Driftwood and Fiorello scoot the last bed onto the fire escape.
Oh, they're all gone. I know I'm crazy.
He runs outside, then into the salon, just as the others hurry the table next door. Finding only beds, Henderson runs back to the bedroom. He steps inside. Driftwood reads nonchalantly in a fake beard. Tommaso wears a tea cozy and a robe and knits, while Fiorello poses as his rocking chair.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I must be in the wrong room.
He staggers out. Now Rosa sits at a piano. Ricardo steps in through the window.
As long as I find you,
Ricardo!
In every dream.
They embrace.
So you thought you could come to America without me, huh?
Oh, you fool. You dear, dear fool.
Because I'm in love with you, you call me a fool. Well, there may be something in that.
But what are you doing here?
Easiest thing in the world, an open window, a detective, and here I am.
Oh, Ricardo, you shouldn't have. They'll only send you back again. Perhaps even put you in jail.
Oh, I don't care, darling. It's worth it.
Suppose I go to Mr. Gottlieb. Maybe he'd intercede for you.
Oh, Gottlieb couldn't know anything. Besides, my Sparry's got to him first.
But there must be something we can do. Who is it?
It is I, Rodolfo.
Rosa ushers Ricardo to the bedroom, quietly shutting the door.
Come in.
Laspari enters in a velvet dinner jacket.
Do you mind my dropping down?
No, of course not. Only, I was just going to take a nap.
Rosa, why do you do this to me?
Do what, Rodolfo?
Whenever I want to see you, you make some excuse. You will not dine with me. You will not ride with me. You won't even take a walk with me.
But, Rodolfo, you know how busy I am. My debut in America.
Well, have you forgotten that it was I who brought about your debut in America?
No, I haven't forgotten.
Then why do you treat me this way?
Rodolfo, I must ask you to leave.
Oh, come now, my dear, be sensible.
You ask me, I think she's being very sensible.
Baroni, well, now I understand. You did not tell me you had a previous engagement.
Well, now you know it.
And I apologize. And now, permit me to withdraw. In a boudoir, two are company, three a crowd.
Just what do you mean by that?
Please, Ricardo.
Surely I have made my meaning clear.
Ricardo punches him.
You have not heard the end of this.
I'm sure I haven't.
You may be very sure.
Now, backstage at the opera, Driftwood strolls in.
Good afternoon, Mr. Driftwood.
Good afternoon, Tim.
Ready for the opening tonight?
Am I?
He wears a derby and carries a long cane. Three workmen tried to hide their card game.
That's all right, boys. I was young myself once.
The cast rises from practice to greet him.
How are all my song bites?
Fine. Sing well tonight now.
The elevator operator stands, smiling.
Waiting for you, Mr. Driftwood. Step right in.
Thank you, and all the
nice day today, isn't it?
Oh, it has its points.
He takes him up.
Here you are, sir.
Thank you, Otto. That's
Driftwood all right, sees Mr. a man Driftwood. Rubbing his name off a door.
What's all this? What's going on here?
You mean what's coming off here?
You can't do that.
Want to bet?
But that's my office.
I'm taking orders for Mr. Gottlieb. Go see him about it.
I'll go see Mr. Gottlieb, and I'll break you, my fine fellow. Go see Mr. Gottlieb.
He barges in.
What's the meaning of this? If you think that I'm going to...
Laspari, Mrs. Claypool, and Henderson stare.
You're busy. I'll return later.
Just a minute, Mr. Driftwood. We have some news for you.
News for me?
Mrs. Claypool has decided to dispense with your services immediately.
Dispense with my services? Why, she hasn't even had them.
I warned you, Mr. Driftwood, if you continue to associate with those men, everything would be over between us.
And you've been associating with them?
How do you know? You couldn't find them.
Henderson flinches.
You've disgraced me and the entire opera company.
So as Mrs. Claypool's new business manager, I must request you to get out and stay out.
Just a minute. You can't fire me without 2 weeks' salary. That's in section 10A of my contract.
I find that you have overdrawn your salary for the next 6 months.
Well, in that case, I'll take 1 week's salary.
You take nothing. Get out.
Well, if that's your best offer, I'll get out, but I'm not making a nickel on it. And as for you, Mrs. Claypool, I withdraw my offer of marriage.
He looks at Lespari.
And that goes for you, too.
Driftwood marches out.
The thanks I get for working my fingers to the bone. All right, Otto.
Just a minute. This car is for officials. Take the stairs.
The stairs?
He peers down.
Well, that's 4 flights. I can't walk all that distance.
All right, I'll help you.
He boots him in the rear, and Driftwood tumbles down the spiral staircase. Another man boots him into an alley. Later, Driftwood, Fiorello, Ricardo, and Tommaso pout on a small park bench. Tommaso slides off the end. He gets up and shoves the others over. Driftwood slides off his end. He stays on the ground. Fiorello settles in.
Now there's room.
Well, that's all I needed. I'm certainly glad I met you boys. First you get me kicked out of my job, then you get me thrown out of my hotel, and finally you push me off a park bench. Well, there's one consolation. Nothing more can happen to me.
A policeman.
Hey, get off of the grass.
Driftwood stands.
Well, I was wrong.
He leans to drink from a water fountain. The stream dies to a trickle.
People drink too much water anyhow. I'm certainly glad you came along. The day you boys came into my life, I had a good job and was about to marry a rich widow. Now I can't even sit on the grass.
I'd give you my seat, but I'm sitting here.
Well, that's an offer. I'll tell you, I'd like to think it over for a couple of days. Where can I find you?
Don't worry. Wherever you are, you'll find us.
No, I'm sick of that. Let's meet somewhere else.
Tommaso jumps up. Ricardo follows.
It's Rosa!
He dashes off.
Rosa!
Fiorello runs off.
Well, at least I can get my bench back.
The others surround Rosa.
Don't feel so badly, Ricardo.
Well, I can't feel very cheerful about being such a hoodoo to you.
We all are making things bad for you.
Tommaso rushes over to Driftwood and pulls him to the group.
What's the matter?
Hey, what do you think? Lespari. He's got a Rosa fire.
Lespari?
Yes, he won't let us sing tonight.
Well, what do you know about that? Well, we've still got all day to think of some plan. And believe me, the way I think it's going to take all day.
That night at the Opera House, people arrive beneath a glittering marquee. Tonight, Rudolfo Lespari in Il Trovatore. Backstage, a man sorts telegrams.
Good evening,
Mr. Gottlieb.
Plenty for you tonight.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Wearing a black opera cape, Gottlieb enters his dark office, switches on the light, and removes his top hat. He turns. Tommaso, Ricardo, Fiorello, and Driftwood lounge in a haze of smoke, puffing cigars. Their feet rest on an ornately carved table strewn with liquor bottles.
What does this mean?
Ah, just the man I want to see. Gottlieb? These are the worst cigars I ever smoked.
Yes, and your ice isn't cold enough either.
Get out of here, all of you. I shall send for the police.
Just a minute, Gottlieb. I'll tell you what we came here for.
Yeah, we make you a proposition.
Oh, so you're willing to give yourselves up, are you?
Yes, if you let the Rosa sing.
Well, I am managing director, and Rosa does not sing. But the rest of your proposition, giving yourselves up, that rather appeals to me.
He picks up the phone.
Give me police headquarters. Sergeant Henderson, please.
Tommaso tosses a box over Gottlieb's head. Gottlieb collapses as Tommaso rubs his hands gleefully. Now in the rehearsal room, musicians tune their instruments. In the shadows, Tommaso and Fiorello tiptoe behind them to a table of opera scores. Into each score, Tommaso slips a sheet of music. Take me out to the ball game. Up in a private box, Driftwood finds Mrs. Claypool.
Walter?
Well, what are you doing here? This is Mr. Gottlieb's box.
He couldn't come, so he gave me his ticket. And he couldn't get dressed, so he gave me his clothes.
What?
His top hat drops below.
Hey, Shorty, will you toss up that Kelly?
He leans over the edge as the gentleman hands him the hat.
Attaboy. Here. Get yourself a stogie.
He offers the tuxedoed man pocket change, then sits.
Well, who's ahead?
In Gottlieb's office.
Open the door!
Gottlieb breaks out of the closet, wearing only his underclothes. He looks around savagely, then picks up the phone.
Get me police headquarters.
up in the box.
Mrs. Claypool.
Yes?
Have you seen Mr. Gottlieb?
Why, no. Isn't he backstage?
He's disappeared. We can't find him anywhere.
You didn't look in the right place.
But the speech. He used to make a speech before the curtain went up.
Oh, dear. What a speech.
That's the cue. Now, you'd better say something.
But I never made a speech in my life.
All right, I'll take care of it.
You?
He rises.
Ladies and gentlemen, I guess that takes in most of you. This is the opening of a new opera season. A season made possible by the generous checks of Mrs. Claypool. I am sure the familiar strains of Verdi's music will come back to you tonight. And Mrs. Claypool's checks will probably come back in the morning.
Everyone exchanges glances.
Tonight marks the American debut of Rodolfo Lasparri. Signor Lasparri comes from a very famous family. His mother was a well-known bass singer. And his father was the first man to stuff spaghetti with bicarbonate of soda, thus causing and curing indigestion at the same time.
Below, Fiorello and Tommaso enter the orchestra pit, dressed in tuxedos.
And now, on with the opera. Let joy be unconfined. Let there be dancing in the streets, drinking in the saloons, and necking in the parlor. Play, Don.
The conductor frowns, then turns to the house and bows. He wraps his baton. Tommaso and Fiorello wrap violin bows.
I'll take this side. Business, but I think there's a brace of woodpeckers in the orchestra.
Below, Tommaso lifts a trombone to his shoulder, then bows it. The conductor waves the baton at him. Tommaso waves his bow. The conductor frowns. Tommaso steps forward, fences with the conductor, then with the violas.
Don't give up, boys. The cavalry is coming.
Gottlieb wears driftwood's tails as he strides toward the box seats.
Uh-huh. Mr. Gottlieb.
I'll see you later. What
he scales the balcony.
It's all right, it's just a Tarzan in me.
He climbs into another box.
Schweinhund.
In the orchestra, Tommaso plays the slide trombone. He snatches a man's top hat and wah-wahs it in front of the instrument's bell. The gentleman snatches it back. Behind the curtain, Gottlieb glares out. He watches Tommaso use chewing gum to stick his music sheet to the man in front of him. The conductor flourishes his baton. In the center of the orchestra, Fiorello plays a small keyboard. Musicians turn a page. The conductor checks his music. Tommaso takes out a ball and a glove. He and Fiorello play catch across the orchestra. Driftwood strolls down the aisle, tossing peanuts. Gottlieb gestures frantically for quiet. Tommaso snatches a violin to bat the ball. He and Fiorello scamper below stage. Gottlieb intercepts them by the back stairs.
Ah, there you are, you.
He chases Fiorello onto a landing.
What are you laughing at?
Those clothes don't fit you.
Are you?
Tommaso clubs him with a shoe, and Gottlieb falls into a storage locker.
Hey, you're getting to be a good shot, Tommaso. The opera starts. Now we really go to work.
In a dressing room, Rosa and Ricardo wait.
The curtain's up.
Downcast, she turns from the door and Ricardo holds her shoulders.
They've started.
Now, don't worry.
Below stage, a man in a tuxedo rushes down the stairs and opens the locker.
Here, Gottlieb!
Where are they? Where did they go?
What?
What?
Gottlieb races upstairs and grabs a stagehand.
Did a couple of men come up here?
What?
What? All I get is what?
He jostles his way to the wings. On the stage, a band of gypsies surrounds a fire. A hollow-eyed old woman rises. From a balcony, driftwood watches.
Boogie, boogie, boogie.
The audience glares.
How would you like to feel the way she looks?
That is driftwood's voice.
I want him put out of the opera house.
Yes, sir.
On stage, Tommaso and Fiorello squat disguised as women in kerchiefs, beads, and long wigs. Tommaso makes fun of the spooky gypsy with his eyes crossed. Gottlieb spots them from the wings. He glowers and shakes a fist. Tommaso brandishes his shoe.
That's right. You go talk to him.
Tommaso crawls off. In the dark theater, two men in tuxedos search for driftwood.
I know he's in the audience someplace.
Backstage, Henderson strides in.
Where's Mr. Gottlieb?
The other side of the stage.
Come on, boys.
A squad of uniformed officers troops behind him.
What was that, high C or vitamin D?
On stage, the gypsies rise suddenly. They link hands, pulling Fiorello with them. Gottlieb scowls as he sees Fiorello dancing. Backstage, Gottlieb lurks with a frying pan. Henderson sees him from behind. As Gottlieb raises the frying pan to brain Fiorello, Henderson grabs another pan and brains Gottlieb. Tommaso brains Henderson. Stepping over their bodies, he joins Fiorello on stage. Backstage, a man discovers the bodies.
No matter what happened here, Mr. Gottlieb, here, give me a hand.
In the opera, a woman flees from a shirtless man with a whip. A crowd of gypsies watches as she cowers in a corner. The man yanks her brutally back. Tommaso grabs another whip and dashes forward. Rubbing his own rear end, he hotfoots across the stage. Backstage, Gottlieb recovers.
Did you catch him?
No, sir, I'm sorry. They're still out there.
Still out there?
He rises dizzily.
I have an idea. Get me two gypsy costumes at once.
He begins to remove his coat. On stage, the shirtless man shoves Tommaso into the crowd. Fiorello beats joyously on an anvil. The shirtless man continues to dance, ripping away the woman's long skirt. Tommaso rips off her short skirt. In the theater, driftwood nods.
Now we're getting somewhere.
He skedaddles through an exit. Two men pursue. In the wings, Laspari wears a pageboy wig.
I will not see unless they are put off there.
Yes, sir.
On stage, Tommaso whistles and waves, poking his head between a dancer's legs. Through the gypsy crowd, Gottlieb stalks him, followed by Henderson, both wearing embroidered costumes. Tommaso strikes a match on the shirtless man's arm. His grin fades as he sees Gottlieb nearing. From the wings, a policeman beckons. Surrounded, Tommaso clambers up a backdrop. He leaps onto a sandbag line, swings to a wall, and wraps his legs around a cluster of thick scenery ropes. He lets go of the first line and coasts toward the floor. On stage, the backdrop rises behind Laspari, who sings to the spooky gypsy woman. Tommaso shimmies up more ropes. Scenery seesaws behind Laspari. He sings gallantly on. Up in the fly gallery, Tommaso leaps from a scaffold, swinging through the air. A screen painted with two trolleys hits the ground. Laspari's eyes roll. Tommaso swings like a trapeze artist, then catches a railing and dangles. He gains a foothold, then leaps out again to escape a chorus member's grasp. Another backdrop falls in front of Laspari, a fruit stand with a bright awning. It ripples as he punches it from behind. Then it rises. Laspari steps angrily forward. Now a huge battleship falls behind him. Laspari motions toward the wings where Gottlieb splutters.
A battleship in El Trovato.
Tommaso sails upside down over Laspari, snatching the wig off his head. He swings back, dropping the wig on Gottlieb. Tommaso soars through the air, puncturing the forest backdrop. He catches the scenery bar. Tommaso stands, balancing on the bar like a tightrope. People crowd nervously at the bottom. A policeman shimmies toward him across the bar. Another swings by a rope. Waving farewell, Tommaso steps through a prop door and drops. His leg catches on the backdrop, and he rips his way safely to the stage. He scrambles to his feet and looks around the stage. In the wings on one side, Gottlieb shakes and fumes. On the other side, Henderson bears a clenched smile and beckons. Tommaso beckons coyly back. Hidden by painted set pieces which they carry, Gottlieb and Henderson creep closer. Tommaso turns tail and dashes up the backdrop. Tommaso rests on the scenery bar and grins. Grabbing a dangling wire, he swings over to the lighting switches high above the stage. The policemen rush to ladders. On stage, Laspari and the orchestra find themselves in darkness.
Stop! Don't you do...
Backstage, the lights come back on.
Here, Gottlieb! Laspari, he's disappeared!
What?
High above, in a suspended wooden box, Fiorello ties up Laspari. Below, Gottlieb puts his hand to his head.
And we haven't even a tenor!
Rosa appears with Ricardo.
You are Baroni.
That's who I am.
Get into a costume, quickly.
What?
I want you to sing at the ready.
Ricardo!
But I have no reputation, Mr. Gottlieb.
Huh?
Besides, I couldn't sing with a strange Leonora. You see, I've been rehearsing with Miss Castaldi.
So that's it.
That's it exactly.
All right. Get them two costumes at once, quick. Please, after the opera, please go ahead.
Now on the shadowy stage, a woman in a slim, dark dress creeps fearfully into a castle courtyard. It's Rosa. Above, in a tower window, Ricardo rises and grasps the window's iron bars. Rosa clenches her hands at her chest. Closing her eyes, she raises a hand to her heart and then to her forehead as she falls back, then stumbles to the castle wall. Light tenderly illuminates Ricardo's face. In the wooden box, Fiorello pokes Laspari.
Hey, you hear that? That's real singing.
He reaches a hand through the bars to Rosa. In her box seat, Mrs. Claypool watches admiringly. Rosa reaches up the stone wall, her arm stretching toward him. Then she turns to the audience, her face lit as if by moonlight. In the wings, Gottlieb and the cast smile, mesmerized. The audience gazes, enrapt. Ricardo clutches one of the window bars. Rosa stumbles from the tower to center stage. She lifts her arms up to the window, then steps back to the wall. Above, Tommaso lets go to clap. The box drops, bumping against a ledge. Fiorello, Driftwood, and Laspari tumble out.
So, is this the opera house? Arrest those men, and this man too.
So it's about time.
Laspari, where have you been?
Been? Do you know what they did to me?
The audience stands, applauding.
I'll sing them an encore that they'll never forget.
He struts to center stage. Laspari stomps off.
Never in my life have I received such treatment. They threw an apple at me.
Well, watermelons are out of season.
The audience remains on its feet.
Rosa Baroni, get out there, quick.
Oh, no. I'm under arrest, Mr. Gottlieb.
What's that?
Well, if they're arrested, I ought to be too. I can't sing if I'm arrested.
Oh, you...
He and Mrs. Claypool look at the audience.
What do we do?
We must have them. They'll save the entire season.
Well, what is it you want?
Well, I... Just a minute. Let me handle this.
All right. Only quick, quick. What do you want?
First, call off that police dog.
Huh? All right. Anything. Anything.
Just a minute. These men are in this country under false pretenses, and I'm going to do my duty.
I'll be responsible for them. Besides, they came over here with Mr. Driftwood. And Mr. Driftwood is an employee of the opera company.
Since when?
Since Baroni started singing. And when I get a hold of the guy that runs that elevator.
All right, anything. Please, go out and sing. Please.
Wait a minute. Please. Wait a minute. It's before he sings, you got to sign a contract. And I get 10%.
Yes, and I get 10% too. Yes.
On stage, Ricardo and Rosa hold hands, smiling. They turn and gaze into each other's eyes. In the wings...
The party of the 10th part, you
no,
mean?
No, no.
The party of the 11th part,
no,
you
no. No.
From behind, Tommaso rips Gottlieb's jacket, then rests sweetly on his shoulder. Gottlieb gapes. Fade to black. A title card appears. The End.